It's Todd Ortloff.
And welcome once again to the program. Nathan West, the Port Angeles City Manager, is my guest. We're going to have him in for about a half hour. I'm going to touch on some highlights of things happening with city government, everything from trees to budget to stormwater. I think we'll be on if we can get through it all in the next 25 minutes or so. Nathan, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Todd, thanks for having me.
As always, busy time. Let's talk. I want to talk about this sequoia tree issue that has been going on because certainly it's made some headlines. It has gotten a lot of people a little ruffled up on both sides of the issue, and as things were standing at the beginning of the week, the city was getting ready to take that tree down, but then the mayor said, hold on, I think we probably better back up a couple of steps and wait. So with that said, let's talk about the situation there with that tree at Lyons Park.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that, Todd. I think it's really important to make sure that we've got the right facts out in the community. And I think that one of the things that I'm very happy about is looking back at the process and looking at what the city did that I felt was very responsible and respectful of our citizens. And I think if you go back, one of the first things that came up is we started to get some complaints and concerns from a property owner relative to impact from that specific tree. And we had a city arborist go out and do an evaluation of that. And that city arborist came back with some findings that ultimately there were some hazard situations, there were concerns about the safety of the tree and the risk it posed, as well as potential damage it could cause to private property and or our citizens. And I think that's so important. One, we were responsive to those complaints. But secondly, we went down the road of planning to remove the tree on that basis, on that city arborist's opinion. What I like that we did then was that we actually received some concerns from citizens about removing the tree, and we just called a timeout. And I think that was a really good move. And this was back in 2017. And we took the opportunity to bring in those concerned citizens, as well as a representative from City Council. Mayor Brooke at the time was also on that committee. Right. And then a number of others from the Parks and Recreation Beautification Commission to really look at some creative ways of moving forward. Is it really necessary to remove? How can we move forward creatively? And I think the outcome was they wanted to get a third-party opinion. And so we took the time to get a list provided from one of the concerned citizens of other parties that could provide professional opinions from an arborist on the tree. We got that third-party opinion, and it came back, unfortunately, with the same results, that there really were hazard situations. There were fixes that you could do, but ultimately it doesn't eliminate the risk that that tree poses. And so, again, we got the same opinion. And along the way, I think it's really important that we always take the time to listen to the concerns of citizens. And I recognize that was some time ago, and a lot of time has lapsed. And I think that Parks and Recreation Department and the Parks Beautification Commission dedicated a lot of effort to ensuring policies were correct and right to help moving forward in similar situations in the future. But also, I think that what we've seen recently is, again, we reinitiated the effort to cut the tree, and there wasn't enough information brought out about the past timeout that we did and the efforts that we made there. And I think it's good to communicate a little bit more about that. One of the things that we saw early on was a desire to have a stop. And I think ultimately it is an administrative decision to move forward with cutting the tree. And at the time, we had planned a cutting date. We learned of some issues of concern about some potential things that citizens were going to do to try to stop it. And we didn't want to put anyone's life at risk or even city employees, whether police department or other, at risk relative to what might occur out there. So we just, again, said, let's take a time out. It's not worth risking anyone's safety on this issue, but also it'll give us an opportunity to communicate again the facts of the situation. Ultimately, it also gave us an additional opportunity to listen to those community members that had concerns. And I think council did a really good job of listening again last night to some additional concerns. But ultimately, I think there's some important lessons learned. And I want to share that I would say that many of our boards and commissions we're so appreciative that they have stepped up as volunteers to be part of city policymaking. Simultaneously, I know, because I'm a part of many of those, that they love more than anything citizens coming and participating in those meetings. And if you look back at the history of this, we had six different Parks and Recreation Beautification Board meetings where they looked at this tree issue. In addition to that, we had two council meetings where this was brought up for information. And I think it's so important to highlight that anyone can go to the city website and just sign up for receipt of these informations on our board and commission. And you're going to get those information that, hey, a new agenda has come out. In the comfort of your own home, you can take a look at that agenda and see if there's something on there of interest. Right. And if there is, please come participate. I mean, these boards and commissions want you participating in those important policy discussions, and I think that's important moving forward.
And I know, you know, in a roundabout way, talking about all of these meetings happening, and I'm glad you brought up that this was a discussion that, because as soon as I saw this story reemerging, and I said, I think we've had this discussion at one point, and we did. I mean, it's been more than a year, almost going on almost 2 years now of discussion about this specific tree. But I can imagine that, you know, there wasn't a lot of participation, unfortunately, along the routes of those six meetings. I think it's just kind of sign of the times in many ways. And I'm with you. I wish more people would participate in that, because I think, having been on a board myself once or twice, it's sometimes you feel like you're flying blind in there, and it would be nice to get some input from the people that you think you're serving.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, for those who are really passionate about the issues, volunteer for a board. And become right. One of the board members.
Right. So what's going to be next? Was there any decision finally made in the next steps for that tree specifically now with this next timeout that happened as of this week?
So the decision to remove the tree had already been made administratively. Right. And again, like I said, we took the time to pause again to listen and for those life safety issues. But ultimately, that decision hasn't changed. The decision is still to remove the tree. We don't have a new date yet or anything like that relative to tree removal, but we will be moving in that direction, but we'll probably be putting out a little bit more communication too about some of the details, some of the facts that are really important to the history of how we got there.
I just following casually online was kind of being thrown about from basically both sides of the issue. It was a bit crazy at times. I mean, there were some things being said, I think, that where I didn't have a clue where some of that information was coming from, frankly.
Exactly. And I it did concern me, some of the facts that were out there. But that said, I recognize that individuals, when they're passionate about an issue, they're going to do everything they can to ensure that ultimately the outcome is one that represents their wishes. And that's okay. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. But I think it's important to communicate too, Todd, that we really care about trees, that ultimately we've done a lot of effort to really improve the tree canopy. We have a long history of buying up properties along our six creek corridors to protect those canopies in perpetuity. Additionally, I think I shared at the council meeting last night, if you look back at all of our major capital projects in the last 10 years, every single one of them includes substantial tree plantings. We've implemented new street tree policies. We have a great track record, I believe, in actually getting tree planting more of a priority and making sure that it enhances the quality of our community. So we care, and it's not something that we really want to be doing, but we do have to look at those risks and liabilities.
One thing I can say, I know some folks have said about this specific sequoia tree is, you know, like wrong tree, wrong place. And you know, I think that's an argument that could be made. So will the city do a replanting of some sort? Is there any sort of a plan to, I'm going to use the word replace, but obviously not in that same spot because you'd have some similar problems, but doing something like that, you know, when this tree does go out at that park?
I think we're really interested in some additional conversations about what we can do in the future. I think there's some limitations in this particular location that we have to think about, but ultimately that is important to us, that we be focused on doing some improvements that actually change the canopy outcome for the entire city.
It's an interesting parcel where that park is at in general. I mean, and I think that has played into a bit of what this conversation has gone to. You've got it butted against some property that could cause all sorts of problems, as you're seeing right now with a tree, for example.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, all right. So moving ahead, but yet another chance for people. How many folks talked last night, roughly, would you say?
My guess would be we probably had 10 to 15 okay. individuals.
So still, and that's pretty robust conversation for a topic at City Council these days. So that's, so obviously people are still a bit abuzz about this as well. So
yeah, more than anything, we really appreciate right. the people coming to the council meeting and sharing their opinion.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break. I want to come back. We're going to touch a little bit on a couple of other issues. The budget was passed last night. We're going to give just a few highlights. We've talked a lot about it, but just kind of what's going ahead into 2019 for the city budget-wise. And I want to talk a bit about stormwater, too, and the way that the permit for the city of Port Angeles may not be the fairest of ways to permit stormwater usage or how it's dealt with here in a city the size of Port Angeles compared to other cities. So we'll chat about that with Nathan West. He's the city manager for Port Angeles. Back with more with him after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
The holiday season is definitely here. And at Taco Time, that means it's corn chowder season too. A huge hit with our guests last year, our warm and hearty Taco Time corn chowder is back. It's made with sweet Northwest white corn, fire roasted green chilies, and locally sourced cheddar cheese, seasoned with cumin and garlic. Taco Time's corn chowder is full of the real ingredients you'd expect from us. It's gluten-free and a great vegetarian option too. So after a hectic day out holiday shopping and picking up the perfect tree, take a break and stop in or drive through for a taste that'll really hit the spot. And for all the Taco Time lovers on your list, why not give them a cactus card good for any of their Taco Time favorites? Cactus cards are available at all of our restaurants. Or even easier, download the Taco Time Northwest app to your phone and send a digital cactus card instantly. Check it out at tacotimenw.com. And don't forget to treat yourself to a cup of hearty corn chowder. Happy holidays from all of us at Taco Time.
Here's another reason to go nuts this holiday season. The Kiwanis Club of Port Angeles is once again holding their annual sale of gourmet mixed nuts. It's a Port Angeles holiday tradition. Enjoy a large can of roasted and seasoned with sea salt, mixed cashews, almonds, hazelnuts, and pecans for $20 per can. Or purchase the chocolate-covered Delicious Delights in a holiday tin perfect for gift-giving, also only $20. Kiwanis sells these goodies to raise money for scholarships for local youth, for Kids Fest, and for so many other good works throughout the community. Enjoy our famous gourmet mixed nuts or Delicious Delights this holiday season. Perfect for holiday munching or to give as gifts, your choice, just $20. You'll find them on sale daily at Jim's Pharmacy behind the Port Angeles Post Office and here at the Radio Pacific Studios at 721 East 1st Street in Port Angeles. Thanks for supporting the Kiwanis Club of Port Angeles and nuts to you this holiday season.
It's an affordable medium, and as far as the reach, the way that we can tell our story, it's definitely more affordable than others.
Kelly Fox of Hartnagle Building Supply and Angelus Millwork has discovered the easy, economical way to reach customers, old and new, on the radio.
We've had great success because it is local and our customers listen. I think our customers like to be connected with what's going on and the happenings in our community that we only get on local radio. And so that personality and that ability to tell our story is so critical.
Let our marketing experts demonstrate how affordable, effective, and fun promoting your business can be on the radio. Find out more. News Radio KONP 101.7 FM 1450 AM or listen to KONP.com. Call today 360-457-1450.
Whatever we want to do, we can accomplish with radio, and so that's been great. It's just fun.
All right, Nathan West, my guest. He is the city manager for Port Angeles. We're going to talk just a little bit about budget. Last night, City Council approved the budget for next year. And I guess maybe I'll ask just kind of the bigger question. How are things looking ahead now into 2019 for the city? I mean, budgets are always tight, it seems like. But what about this year?
Todd, again, it was really tight for 2019 planning the budget, and it was one of those pretty overwhelming challenges when I first came into the position, wondering if we were actually going to get through this with a balanced budget without having to make some hard decisions. And ultimately, we were able to get there, and I'm really proud of city staff who ultimately made some sacrifices within their individual budgets to make ends meet and to make it work, and we got balanced. We were about $1.2 million out when it started. And at the end of the day, we have a balanced budget. It is a very, it's a large budget. You know, it's $115 million for the whole city and about $20 million for the general fund. So we're talking about big numbers, and it's really difficult to find revenues to really cover those increased costs that we see on an annual basis. But ultimately, I'm really thrilled with City Council's support of it. You know, we released the budget to them on October 12th. We had a work session on the budget. We had two subsequent City Council meetings. Excuse me, and Council worked really hard on the budget too, and we really appreciate their support on it.
Probably the, I guess, one highlight, quote unquote, in there is the fact, I mean, utility rates, basically the city was able to keep them relatively flat. Of course, there's a water rate increase that got people a little bit up in arms, but overall, it's actually a flat utility increase this year.
Yeah, we did our very best, Todd, to keep it so that we weren't increasing utility rates to the best of our ability, because we very much recognize that our taxpayers, our ratepayers, are at their limits. They're beyond what their incomes can allow them to afford. And ultimately, we need to think that through. We need to think through every expense, whether it's in the utilities or the general fund, and think about the implications to taxpayers.
Now, this was kind of a policy that started with your predecessor a little bit last year, in the fact, and I think we were all kind of shocked for the very first time. Not only did the city flatten utility rates, but rolled them back in a couple of cents as well. I know you can't sustain it that way forever, but it looks like at least another year, and I know there's going to be a reanalysis of things here coming up.
Yeah. Coming up in the spring, we're going to do a greater reanalysis, basically a cost of service assessment that really looks at the rate structure and reexamines that. I think it's important, you know, Dan McKean did a phenomenal job of taking a look at utilities and really thinking through how we can move forward in the future. And we've got a lot more work to do on that. But ultimately, we want to make sure, one, that our utility rates are affordable, but two, that we don't compromise the future in making them affordable. We don't want to put off increasing rates and only to have a more drastic increase in the future. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why you saw water go the way it did this year. It wasn't a big increase. It was a small one, but it still needed to be done.
Frankly, the city's got some infrastructure issues with water that it needs to take care of.
We really do.
Right.
You know, it does seem like at least every couple weeks, we've got an infrastructure challenge out there due to the historic nature of our infrastructure.
Now, one note I know that you made in presenting the budget, and I'm sure you're glad of this in the utility side of things, especially, is that, you know, the city is not, you know, subsidizing one utility with another one, which has been the case in some cases. And I think this drives a little bit to what you were just saying.
Yeah, that has been the direction of council in the past. I think we might have some interest in deviating from that a little bit into the future. But ultimately, some of what you saw with the water utility was balancing things out so that we're seeing less of a subsidy situation.
Right.
It's hard to predict where we come out at the end of the day with the cost of service assessment, but we're going to look at those issues again.
All right. Well, speaking of utilities, let's talk about stormwater just a bit. And this not only is a utility for the city, but this is a bigger issue in the Department of Ecology has a, well, the city has a permit for stormwater management. And I know one of the things that has happened, and you wrote a letter to a Department of Ecology recently, and this is what brought up what I wanted to talk about some of the, I guess, you know, quite frankly, the unfairness of a city the size of Port Angeles has in what is a pretty onerous permit. To considering that it's really intended for much larger, more metropolitan areas, I guess, safe to say. And you've written a letter now saying, you know, can we reevaluate this somehow? Because it's really strapping the city and also development in the city, too, for that matter.
Correct. Well, Todd, it is a real challenge for us in that, you know, we are under a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit under the State Department of Ecology. It's a federal permit the Department of Ecology administers. And we've been under that permit for quite some time. And I think there's some good things to highlight about that permit. Ultimately, the city is very much a steward of our environment, making sure that ultimately we don't have pollutants in our stormwater. And I think that's important. But I also think it's important that we implement permits like that in a way that represent our community well, are good fits for our community, recognizing the local circumstances. And I think the challenge that we saw, again, every few years, we see a new layer added on by Department of Ecology to this permit. And what it certainly feels like is the permit is being grown to the point where it becomes a permit exactly like one you might find in Seattle or Tacoma or a larger city. And in fact, we had a public meeting here that Ecology ran where they actually came and shared that information, that ultimately our goal is to keep everybody the same and try to be consistent across the state. And I think that's a real challenge, something that I can tell you will be really difficult for Port Angeles if we have to go there. There's a lot of different circumstances here, and one size does not fit all when it comes to stormwater permits.
Yeah, I was going to say, so maybe give us a flavor as to, you know, what, why Port Angeles can't keep up with a Tacoma or a Seattle, for example.
I think there's a lot of difference in the capability our community has just from a geological perspective and a soil perspective. The lack of our ability to actually infiltrate in many of our soils. I think simultaneously, just the sporadic nature of soil makeup. You might have percolation in one area and a few hundred feet away, you don't. And so that is really hard to predict and ultimately makes the planning and design for some of these things extremely difficult. I think, too, we have a very different style of development. We don't have large-scale subdivisions coming forward. We have a very limited land base remaining. And so you're not seeing the development that you might see in some of these larger I-5 corridor areas where it's one subdivision after another and people coming in planning new subdivisions. What we see is individuals either coming in trying to do their own house by themselves or with one contractor. We rarely have developers coming in this community and doing massive projects.
Yeah, and that lends itself to some volume issues, and I don't mean that in development, but quite frankly, there's not enough population to pay for a lot of what might be required in some of this, whereas if you do have, as you mentioned, some larger developments and a lot more people that are paying into it, and frankly, becomes more affordable per project, so to speak.
Absolutely. I think, too, it's, you know, we've done a really good job of adapting to some of those permit requirements, and we're really proud of some of the development community members who have just stepped up and found out how it works, and ultimately they've turned it into a pretty easy process. So ultimately we're appreciative of the private sector that's really come on board, adapted to the permit. The challenge is we're still catching up to some of those prior layers that were put on, and we have a lot more catch-up to do, especially before Ecology tries to put another layer on.
One of the things that I know we've talked about, and this comes up all the time, this is a housing issue as well. And when we talk about Port Angeles having kind of this housing, quote-unquote, housing crisis in affordability, this has an effect on it, doesn't it? Because it's kind of curtailing perhaps people that might be able to maybe make a dent in some housing and make the inventory a little more available, at least.
Yeah, I think it definitely has an impact. At the end of the day, whether it's a building height issue or a stormwater issue, mm-hmm. developers have to come in and be able to pencil out a future development if we're going to see more housing in the community. And ultimately, we do have a strong desire for more multifamily housing. But I think stormwater is one piece. We really need to work on some additional incentives to get the housing that we want to see. I know one of the things that we are planning to bring on December 18th to council for consideration is an ordinance and resolution in support of a multifamily tax credit, which is a really big step forward, trying to incentivize.
City's never had anything quite like this then. This is a new approach.
We have not. Yeah. We have not. I think historically you've seen more of a focus on providing incentives for economic development and not so many on housing. And I think that's a shift that we're going to start to see.
Interesting. Okay, to bring this storm, what's next do you think is going to happen with this? You've sent this letter. Wait and see. What's your hope?
My hope would be that Ecology takes a little bit more time to respect the fact that we are a unique local jurisdiction with very different needs and a very different flow system for this community. And we really need to recognize the uniqueness of our community. And we hope Ecology joins us in recognizing that.
All right. Nathan West, I know you got to run, so we're going to cut it short today. But happy holidays. Thanks for coming in. And you're off on your own first budget now. So there you go.
Todd,
right?
Thank you so much.
All right. Nathan West, he's city manager for Port Angeles. And we try to chat with him about once a month here on the program. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
Eagle One, prepare to rendezvous with Galaxy.
Copy that, Houston.
Eagle One, prepare for an unscheduled docking with Domino's One.
Confirming two medium, two topping pan pizzas, Houston.
Affirmative, Eagle One, sausage with black olives and pepperoni with mushrooms.
Just $8.99 with the online order, Houston.
Affirmative, Eagle One.
Houston, we have a problem.
Go ahead, Eagle One.
We forgot about the tip.
Order online at dominoes.com.
At Les Schwab Tires, we believe there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad tires. Rain? No problem. Sleet? Sounds good. Flash flood advisories due to winter storms? Well, you might want to stay off the roads for that one. So, whatever the forecast holds, now's a good time to come by and let us take a look. We'll let you know if you need adjustments for the season, or for that matter, if you don't. Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.
Your air taxi is waiting. For super fast air service to Seattle, ride the air taxi from Wright Brothers Aviation. The air taxi leaves when you want to leave and returns when you want to return. Wright Brothers Aviation flies on your schedule, serving Port Angeles, Squim, Port Townsend, and destinations throughout the Northwest. Fly to Seattle, Boeing Field, or SeaTac more conveniently than ever. Call Wright Brothers Aviation, 452-6226, or go to WrightBrothers.com.
Where did you get that greatest grandma sweatshirt?
Would you believe my granddaughter gave it to me after I bought her a pretty dress for her new doll at the Crafty Corner?
What's the Crafty Corner?
It's a shop in the Port Angeles Senior Center that sells all sorts of handcrafted items that are very fine quality.
Sounds expensive to me.
That's where you would be wrong, as usual.
Okay. Why don't you show me where I can get me some doll clothes?
You're going to be surprised at all the things you will enjoy seeing. It might even give someone like you some ideas for Christmas gifts.
I'll go take a look just for you. When are they open?
Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 7th Street and Peabody. What are you doing all day, anyway?
Why don't we go there right now, have some coffee in the lounge at the same time?
Gee, the fun really does start here.
Shop the Crafty Corner Gift Shop in the Port Angeles Senior Center, 7th and Peabody.
First President of the United States, George H.W. Bush, was eulogized today by his son, the 43rd President.
Former President George W. Bush, who's always worn his emotions so visibly on his face, breaking down at the end of his eulogy for his father, former President George H.W. Bush, who he says is now reunited with his wife Barbara and their daughter Robin, who died at age 3.
So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man. The best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again.
Karen Travers, ABC News, at the National Cathedral in Washington.
Now the Bushes are flying back to Texas, accompanying that flag-draped casket on the presidential jet normally called Air Force One. There will be one more private funeral tomorrow in Houston. Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
Here's your AccuWeather forecast. Plenty of sunshine this afternoon. Today's high 42. Clear tonight, low 25. And mostly sunny tomorrow. Thursday's high also 42. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, low 25 again. Friday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 43. Passing rain and sleet showers Friday evening. Then Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high of 46. Sunday, periods of rain, high 48. For AccuWeather, I'm Sally Sherman.
Welcome back to the program. We introduced you last week to Giving Tuesday, the day of giving that comes after the post-Thanksgiving buying spree. It's hard after Thanksgiving not to get caught up in the rush to the December holidays. Bellies full, decorations need hanging, and the stores want us to spend. This week, though, all of us were urged to shift our focus from consuming to contributing, at least for one day. Here's ABC's Aaron Katursky with a look back.
You know the days dedicated to shopping following Thanksgiving. Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday. Then, for the seventh year, came Giving Tuesday.
Giving Tuesday is a day for anyone, anywhere to give in whatever way feels meaningful to them.
Asha Curran is Chief Innovation Officer here in New York at the 92nd Street Y, which conceived of Giving Tuesday.
Individuals can donate or they can volunteer. They can just show a neighbor an act of kindness.
Why do we need a day for that?
I think we need 365 days a year for that. But like a wedding anniversary or a birthday, it's a day to celebrate. Right? It's a day to actually focus on generosity. And I think in celebrating it on one particular day, people actually realize how important it is to our lives and to the health of our communities and our country.
If the retail days after Thanksgiving are meant to launch the holiday shopping season, Curran said Giving Tuesday is meant to kick off the charitable giving season.
In the age of social media, I think 7 years is more than enough for it to become fully embedded. But now it is very much a digitally driven movement. And that's ideas spread like wildfire online these days.
How do you get associated with Giving Tuesday? Or is it just kind of do whatever you want?
You do whatever you want. I mean, the idea behind Giving Tuesday is that it's not something that we own, that we give away to people, that we allow them to participate in. That's not true for organizations, or it's not true for individuals or communities. It's completely open source and completely adaptable. And actually, the very cool thing about Giving Tuesday is the way that people have taken it and changed it and made it their own. For anybody familiar with the nonprofit world, there's really actually a lot of competition between nonprofits, competing for donor dollars and competing for resources. And instead, we're seeing organizations come together like groups of arts organizations, or in California, we were reading about a group of eight immigrants' rights organizations who had previously only competed with each other coming together to fight for the same mission.
Are you finding these kinds of campaigns change year to year based on whatever the current climate is?
That's such an interesting question. They seem, in a way, very tied to the current moment. And in another way, like a pivot from the current moment, right? So we're in this time where it feels like every day we wake up and there's just something else, and we're all sad and fearful and angry a lot of the time. And Giving Tuesday is about focusing on the positive impact that we can make. So people were remarking to me a lot last year that it was like, felt like this one day that they were allowed to just be optimistic and hopeful.
There is something about giving, about being generous, whether it's with time or with money. That's, of course, good for the recipient, but also for the giver.
Basic human need to give to other people and to have other people give to you. We like to say that there's no one on the whole face of the planet who doesn't have something to give. But it's also true in the inverse, right? There's not a person on the face of the planet who doesn't need something and who doesn't need a small act of kindness. Generosity is about the small ways that we choose to interact with the people in our lives every single day. And so having a day to focus on that is probably going to make us more mindful of it.
How do you measure success?
That's a great question. So I think a lot of people think that we measure it only in dollars. And I will say that if we did measure it only in dollars, we're doing pretty well, right? Although it's really interesting. If you think about $300 million donated online last year in 2017, that's amazing. But last year, Americans spent $20 billion between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday. That's not even counting in-store shopping on Black Friday. So that's quite an incredible juxtaposition, and I think we still have a long way to go. But when I hear stories about groups of teenagers going out in small groups to perform unasked for acts of kindnesses for their neighbors, raking leaves, two friends in Denver have solicited and donated over 400,000 pairs of socks to the homeless over the past six Giving Tuesdays, I measure success in those ways too.
Early estimates show this year's Giving Tuesday surpassed last year's donations. Reporting for Perspective, I'm Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Back with more in a moment.
The Family Christmas Album is full of wonderful Christmas memories. Presented by Harper Ridgeview Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Mark Gustafson with Harper Ridgeview Funeral Chapel. May this holiday season bring you and your family happiness and joy. Happy holidays from all of us at Harper Ridgeview Funeral Chapel, serving families of Clallam County since 1903.
The very first Christmas I remember that was exceptionally special was my son was 14 months old, and he was a little bit more aware of what Christmas, at least getting toys, was about. My husband and I were up all night putting the train platform up and the tree up till 3 o'clock in the morning. Got this little fella up and combed his hair so he looked good and brought him out. And, of course, he was just astounded at all these good things. And I was crying because I was so happy. And very excited. I mean, we took home movies. And all day long, this little fella didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to open anything. And when he didn't know what to do with it. And he didn't smile all day long. He was just awestricken with the wonder of it all. And when we ran the train, he would just stand there and say, choo-choo train, choo-choo train. But I spent a lot lot of the day, very choked up. Still, I'm choked up now talking about it, and he's 41 years old. So it was a real, real special Christmas, probably one of the best.
You already know that Z104.9 plays the classics from artists like Jackson 5, Rod Stewart, The Beach Boys, Chicago, and Miss Whitney. But this season, Z is decking the halls and making each day merry and bright. Decorate with Panache in conjunction with Z104.9 are proud to bring you the Christmas classics all month long. Your favorite iconic singers belting out your favorite holiday hits. Decorate with Panache, Squim's newest storefront full of unique home furnishings and lifestyle treasures, wants to make sure you jingle all the way through the holiday season. For classic style, check out Decorate with Panache. For classic Christmas hits, keep it tuned to 104.9 KZQM.
If you can't get an appointment or don't have a doctor, remember ClinicCare. We can handle your primary health care needs, and you never need an appointment. ClinicCare in 621 East Front Street, 452-5000. We make health care easier and more affordable.
Got an event coming in 2019? Why not make it really special by adding live classic hits from the award-winning band Black Diamond Junction? Don't you want somebody? Voted best performance group on the peninsula in 2016, 2017, and 2018, BDJ will make your event sparkle with sing-along favorites from the 1960s through the 2000s. All easy on the ears and great for dancing. Hurry, dates are filling up. Drop a line at blackdiamondjunction.com or Black Diamond Junction on Facebook.
Controversial transaction in the NFL this past week. The Washington Redskins signing Reuben Foster, who was released by another team following his second domestic violence arrest. His signing raising some new questions about whether the league is too lenient when handling these types of cases. ABC's Byron Pitts has more on that story.
We decided to make the move, and we'll deal with the outcry.
The Washington franchise was the only NFL team interested in Foster. And now their controversial move has the team's head coach, Jay Gruden, playing defense.
We want to let the process play out and see what happens and get to the bottom of it. And, you know, there's no guarantees ever going to play here.
Washington Super Bowl winning former quarterback and now senior vice president Doug Williams saying in a radio interview, the Redskins front office was united in their decision.
The high risk was the beat down, that the beat up that, you know, we're going to take from a PR. We are hoping that things come out and it wasn't the way that everything has been perceived. And well, we don't know that.
On Tuesday, Williams said in a statement, the Redskins fully understand the severity of the recent allegations made against Reuben. If true, you can be sure these allegations are nothing our organization would ever condone. But Washington's choice to even consider a player under such a cloud of suspicion is leading many to question whether this team and the NFL as a whole have learned their lesson when it comes to dealing with allegations of domestic violence.
Dallas Cowboys star Greg Hardy.
Football star Jameis Winston.
Another crushing blow for the NFL.
The latest allegations against this 24-year-old came last Saturday night with a 911 call from a Tampa hotel room.
Your ex-boyfriend did what?
Took my phone and broke it and slapped me in my face.
That's the voice of Reuben Foster's ex-girlfriend, Alyssa Ennis.
Warning, the charge of battery, domestic violence.
Foster, a first-round draft pick and a star on the field, was dropped by the 49ers the following morning, only to be picked up by Washington 3 days after his arrest. This was not Foster's first run-in with the law. In April, he was charged with felonies for domestic violence, making criminal threats, and weapons possession after being accused of beating up Ennis. She later recanted her accusations, claiming she made the story up as revenge for Foster breaking up with her. This week, the NFL placed Foster on the commissioner's exempt list, making him ineligible to practice or play until it's concluded its own investigation into his arrest. Foster is the latest in a long line of NFL players accused of domestic violence, the most notorious, Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens.
You know, I failed miserably, but I wouldn't call myself a failure because I'm working my way back up.
The NFL initially gave Rice what many considered a slap on the wrist, a 2-game suspension. Then later, a second video emerged, also obtained by TMZ Sports, showing Rice punching Palmer in the face in an elevator. The Ravens terminated their running back's contract, and the NFL suspended him indefinitely. Rice appealed and was reinstated, although he is yet to be signed by any NFL team.
I got it wrong in the handling of the Ray Rice matter, and I'm sorry for that.
Rice entered an intervention program for first-time offenders, and his charges were dismissed at completion. But the case sparked a national outcry and ushered in sweeping changes to the NFL's policy, including independent investigative powers and a minimum six-game suspension for first-time domestic violence offenders.
In charge of battery, domestic violence.
Esther Reuben Foster, his signing is the latest in a string of controversial personnel decisions by Washington. In 2015, the club signed defensive player Junior Gallette after he was released by the New Orleans Saints for a domestic violence arrest. Though the charges were later dropped, Gallette served a two-game suspension. The team's current starting running back, Adrian Peterson, served a six-month suspension in 2014 for child abuse while playing for the Minnesota Vikings. Just last week, revealing in an interview with Bleacher Report that he still physically disciplines his children and that he didn't let the suspension change his ways. The arraignment for Foster's charges is scheduled for January 3rd, and for now, Foster's fate remains uncertain, as well as the stature of this once revered NFL franchise.
Rosamund Pike tells the story of legendary journalist Marie Colvin in the recently released movie A Private War. Pike, along with Colvin's former colleague Christiane Amanpour and others, give an inside look into Colvin's life. ABC's Dan Harris sat down with Pike and the movie's director, Matthew Heineman, to talk about making a powerful film.
We were just sniped. There's a bullet. The Gaddafi's forces are right in front of us. They're also sniping from the side. There's mortars coming in and going out. We're basically in the middle of a firefight.
In the middle of a firefight is where Sunday Times reporter Marie Colvin all too often found herself.
Marie Colvin was fearless. Brilliant.
Marie Colvin was a reporter's reporter.
From the deserts of Libya to the jungles of East Timor.
Not a lot of food, so really rapidly deteriorating situation.
To her final dispatches days before her death in Syria.
Every civilian house on the street has been hit.
Her personal mission, to bear witness to the horrors of war.
She always wrote about human beings. You know, she always tried to sort of humanize these conflicts.
Giving voice to the voiceless, despite the undeniable risk.
I often say Marie didn't die working, you know, she died living. This is what she did.
I'm not armed! Journalist! Come here!
Now her life and her work, the subject of the new film, A Private War.
The film is both an homage to Marie, but an homage to journalism, and an homage to people who are out there fighting for the truth and, you know, shedding light on dark corners of the world.
In his first narrative feature, director Matt Heineman felt a great responsibility in telling Marie's story.
I really wanted to explore sort of what drives somebody to go to these places to explore the sort of ravages of war and attempt to put a human face to it, and also explore the deep cost that Marie paid for doing that.
The pain of war is really beyond telling.
In the year 2000, Colvin was given the Courage in Journalism Award for her unrelenting pursuit of human truth.
Whatever the rights and wrongs of a conflict, I feel we fail if we don't face what war does, face the human horrors, rather than just record who won and who lost.
But a year later, while covering the conflict in Sri Lanka, Colvin was blinded in one eye by shrapnel from a grenade. Losing sight in one eye did not stop Colvin from seeking the truth and from compelling her readers to care.
She was a 12-year-old Palestinian girl killed by a stray bullet that pierced her heart. I watched her parents hold her as she bled out. She was wearing pearl earrings. She probably thought she looked pretty that day. I see it. So you don't have to.
Actress Rosamund Pike, who's already garnering critical acclaim, says she fought for the chance to embody Colvin and to collaborate with Heineman, who received an Oscar nomination for his documentary Cartel Land.
I don't think either of us deviated from the idea that we were going to get as damn close to Marie as she was, and as she talked and she walked and she smoked and she lived and she loved and she, you know, fought for the story as we could.
The duo took a uniquely journalistic approach, from replicating Colvin's distinct voice and mannerisms.
I hate being in a war zone, but I also feel compelled.
world to see it for myself.
To doing extensive research and interviews with people who knew her.
I need a photographer. Any good?
The best.
Portrayed by Jamie Dornan in the film, photojournalist Paul Conroy worked tirelessly to capture Colvin's words in pictures.
Please, listen to me next time.
From the Arab Spring uprising in Libya. Colvin's drive to get the story and to get it first was well known.
We were very fiercely committed to getting the story first and getting the scoop first. But in one of the most important, you know, scoops of the last, you know, decade, the two of us pooled our resources to get the last ever interview with Muammar Gaddafi.
Christiane Amanpour and Colvin's interview airing.
They say that you ordered air attacks against people, against civilians. I think Marie, my generation, we showed that having a female perspective was really important. But most importantly, when we came to the field, war was changing. It was becoming a war against civilians.
It was this kind of war being waged in Syria that Colvin could not stay away from. In 2012, she and Conroy got themselves smuggled inside to report on the destruction firsthand. Heinemann recreated the widow's basement and cast Syrian refugees, all with real stories of loss to tell.
I, as Marie, put my hand on her and she looked at me and she said, I don't want this just to be words on paper. I thought, my goodness, she doesn't, you know, she's speaking to me as though I'm a journalist. This is not a woman in a movie speaking to an actress.
It was their unwavering determination to shed light on one of the most brutal offensives in homes that compelled Colvin and Conroy to remain in Syria.
Stop.
What are you doing?
I gotta go back. There are 28,000 people there.
In February of 2012, as two of the last Western journalists inside, they witnessed the death of a little boy killed by shelling. Colvin speaking to CNN's Anderson Cooper.
And we just watched this little boy, you know, his little tummy heaving and heaving as he tried to breathe. It was horrific. Just, I mean, my heart broke.
That decision to broadcast a great risk, bringing attention to the suffering, would also bring Assad's attention to them. The following day, Colvin was killed by an airstrike. Conroy was severely wounded.
For me, that assignment never really ended. You know, I, on the way out, they were saying, you know, get out and tell the world. I just felt a real sense of obligation and a duty of honor to Marie.
And for the filmmakers, continuing to tell the story that ultimately killed Colvin could not be more important right now.
It's not common that we see feature films about conflicts that are ongoing. Usually it's got a retrospective element. Was that tricky in some way?
That is one of the tragedies of how the film ends, is not just in how her life ends, but also that this tragedy of Syria persists till today. You know, 500,000 plus people have been killed since she was killed.
Her story is important. Reminding us through this film is important. And we journalists standing up for what's right, standing up for the truth, and standing up for being the eyes and ears of the people is really important to crystallize right now.
In fact, no one said it better than Colvin herself. Our mission is to report these horrors of war with accuracy and without prejudice.
And that'll do it for our program this afternoon. Thanks for joining us. ABC News coming up next.
Your finish comes first at First Race.
It's so hard to find a good time to wash your car or truck. Why not let the friendly folks at First Race Car Wash do the job in minutes? Get a wash and polish wax and fill up with high-quality Union 76 gas. Diesel's also available at First Race Car Wash.
You're a winner every time when you've got that First Race shine.
Ooh, your finish comes first at First Race. Your friends at Peninsula Bottling would like to extend a warm thank you to their customers for their continued loyalty over the years. Serving the Olympic Peninsula since 1955, Peninsula Bottling is your local Pepsi distributor and also one of the sponsors of KONP's Breakfast with Santa. Please remember to shop local this holiday season and support your hometown businesses so that our community can grow and prosper in the coming new year. Peninsula Bottling wishes everyone a very warm and happy holiday season.
You know that feeling you get when you slip on the perfect pair of jeans from a discount retailer? Neither do I. Sure, it's a way of burning calories as you wriggle and writhe and dance around chanting,
"Oh, come on, you can do this!"
Instead of laying on the bed and pleading with the universe to make them fit, go to Cowboy Country and slip into jeans that are meant to fit you right. And hug all your beautiful curves. Skip the dance party and slide into comfort at Cowboy Country. Keep it simple. Live country.
Here's another reason to go nuts this holiday season. The Kiwanis Club of Port Angeles is once again holding their annual sale of gourmet mixed nuts. It's a Port Angeles holiday tradition. Enjoy a large can of roasted and seasoned with sea salt, mixed cashews, almonds, hazelnuts, and pecans for $20 per can. Or purchase the chocolate-covered Delicious Delights in a holiday tin perfect for gift-giving, also only $20. Kiwanis sells these goodies to raise money for scholarships for local youth, for Kids Fest, and for so many other good works throughout the community. Enjoy our famous gourmet mixed nuts or delicious delights this holiday season. Perfect for holiday munching or to give as gifts, your choice, just $20. You'll find them on sale daily at Jim's Pharmacy behind the Port Angeles Post Office and here at the Radio Pacific Studios at 721 East 1st Street in Port Angeles. Thanks for supporting the Kiwanis Club of Port Angeles and nuts to you this holiday season.
Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie, always willing to give listeners plenty of good advice.
My friend, I'm going to watch his house once in a while, and his mom passed away in the house. If for some reason his mom's ghost ever pops up, what do you think I should do?
Run. Get out of there.
I like that advice.
Coast to Coast AM, weeknights at 10 on News Radio KONP.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Rusey. I volunteer with United Way, reading to children to help prepare them for a better academic future. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by
Your information station. News Radio KONP, Port Angeles, Squim. FM 101.7.